Auto Line After Hours is brought to you by Bridgestone Tires, your journey, our passion, and by Henkel. Excellence is our passion.
This is Auto Line After Hours with John McElroy, episode 320 for February 19 of 2016. Powertrain versus propulsion, and from pickups to potholes. Watch Autoline After Hours live at autoline.tv every Thursday at 3 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 12 p.m. Pacific or 20 hours GMT. You can subscribe to this podcast for free by searching for Autoline in iTunes, Stitcher, or YouTube. Gary.
John, how are you?
I'm doing fantastic.
You know, I was just...
That's not true, but I'm going to say it.
I was just at Epcot this week, and I stood in line for more than an hour to get on the Chevy test track ride. And I think that if Chevrolet were as successful at its car sales as it is at test track, it would be the number one vehicle manufacturer in the world. Not General Motors, just Chevy. Unbelievable how many people wanted to get on that ride.
Is the ride good?
Yeah, it's a great ride.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Is it scary?
It's fun. I mean, you're in an open car, and you're allegedly going 60 miles an hour outside at one point on this ride. But as you're waiting in line to get into the pavilion, you know, they've got lots of properties for design staff, and it's sort of interesting. So you're distracted while you're waiting in line. But man, it was just amazing to see how many people were waiting in line to get to see that.
Cool. And we should let all the viewers know that other voice that they just heard was Joanne Mueller from Forbes.
Hi.
Great having you on the show
again.
Thank you. Yeah. And we got to let everybody know that Mike Whalen from the Detroit News is in the house tonight with us, too.
Thanks, John. I have not been on the new ride, but I was on the test dummy one that GM first had down there.
And was that any good?
I thought it was okay. I mean, you stand in line for a few hours and then anything is really good.
Yeah. I can't believe you'd stand in line that long. I'm not a line stander.
Well, I mean, you can't possibly... Well, they do have this fast pass thing, but unfortunately, yeah. I did not avail myself in enough time to do that, so I waited in line. So, what the heck?
I stood in line for a chocolate chip cookie for an hour.
See?
In New York City recently.
There you go. And was it a good cookie?
This cookie was out of this world. So,
see?
You know,
man.
It depends on what motivates you.
Mm-hmm. I guess.
Fat Tuesday bakeries were lined up around the block. I'm in Detroit for a punch.
Yeah.
Unreal.
All right, enough about cookies and fake rides.
I thought this was the bake show.
Yeah. Yeah, the Food Network.
No, look, one of the things I wanted to ask you guys about is you must have heard that Yahoo Autos is getting killed off. Yahoo's killing off a bunch of, I guess they're digital magazines, right?
So,
Yeah.
It's a bummer because we got, at least three of our colleagues worked at Yahoo's Auto, and looks like the automotive journalism business continues to get tougher all the time.
Right, but speaking of food, Yahoo Food is being killed off. Yahoo Health is being killed off. Yahoo Parenting is being killed off. Yahoo Makers is being killed off. Yahoo Travel is being killed off. And Yahoo Real Estate. So, the auto guys, they're one of many.
No, they're special to us.
But 15% cut across the board.
Yeah, Yahoo is a company in big trouble, right? And Marissa Mayer, the CEO there, was hailed as this genius who came over from Google, right, to run things. And she hasn't delivered. And Yahoo has struggled now for a while. I feel really badly, though, for some of our good colleagues, Sharon Silk Carty and Justin Hyde and...
Scott Burgess.
Yeah, all good journalists who, they're the real thing. And so I have confidence that they will still be able to do their craft. It's just journalism is changing, right? And automotive journalism, too. But we need people who know what they're talking about.
Yeah,
real journalists.
And those three do know what
they do. And so I'm confident that they'll land somewhere and we'll still get to see their words.
So does it say anything about the auto industry or does it say anything about digital publications, or does it just say that Marissa couldn't get it done?
I was surprised by the timing of it just because how well the auto industry is doing as a whole right now and all the news coming out of it. I mean, even if it's bad news like recalls and NHTSA or different like that, but the tech sector and the boom coming into the auto industry. But I mean, I came from an online publication, and online publications
you can
do
name
have
it,
trouble.
Okay.
I came
we don't
from
care on this
MLive.com, which was previously all online. And I mean, online publications do have trouble making revenue and making money because advertising is so difficult online, and keeping people's attention and retaining that is a difficult process. It's not like having a newspaper where you say, this many people are going to get it, and, you know, they bring in the coupon and say, I saw this in the newspaper. It's more so, oh, here's an ad, here's an ad, here's an ad, here's an ad. Mm-hmm. And if I accidentally click on this, oh, I'm just going to hit that box next.
Remember when all this started to unravel, really was when the classified ads for cars went away. And that is when newspapers lost their revenue stream. And
a huge chunk of it.
Yeah.
Huge.
Yes.
I mean, I want to say like 40%
yes,
or something
exactly.
like that.
Exactly.
And Joanne,
so,
is, you're a former newspaper.
Yeah, I used to be at the Free Press.
Right.
Right. And so the ad model is broken, the advertising. And so the media is struggling to figure out how to make money from advertising. It has absolutely nothing to do with the need for good content about a booming industry, which is autos right now. And if you look at other publications, there are a lot of companies that are actually beefing up their auto coverage. It might be a tech publication like CNET. They just opened a bureau in Detroit and put three or four people here.
Right.
Because they know that technology is happening in Detroit, and they need to cover it in the cars. And meanwhile, other companies are adding bureaus in San Francisco or Silicon Valley. Yeah. So there's plenty of demand for content. The outlets are still being, you know, debated, and the model for making money is where the real problem is.
When you mentioned the classified ads, when the former CEO, it was announced early this week that Ricardo had passed away, I actually went through our archives back in the 70s
John
and
Ricardo,
80s.
Former
yes,
chairman
former
of Chrysler.
And half of the newspaper were classifieds. I mean, I was flipping through screen by screen by screen, having to go from publication date to publication date to find out information about him when Iacocca took over for him. And it was amazing to see the amount of ads and the amount of classifieds in those papers compared to now because, I mean, while your Sunday paper's still pretty thick, it's not even close to what it was almost every single day of the week.
Yeah.
Right.
But
yep.
now you get your car, you know, you shop for a car on Auto Trader or yep. KBB or Edmunds, one of those places.
Mm-hmm.
It's a different animal now.
Mm-hmm. Completely.
Yeah, that you mentioned John Ricardo, and 91 years old. And so I was looking to see how old he was when he retired from Chrysler. 55.
Yeah, 55.
Well, he was pushed out. He was pushed out because, remember, he had brought Iacocca in.
Right.
The company was going south. This is in the late 70s. You know, Chrysler had done a lot of dumb things. Ford had been international for a long time. GM was really beefing up. When Chrysler decided, hey, we got to get in on this game, they bought a bunch of dogs. I don't know if you guys remember or know of Simca. Mm-hmm. You remember the car company yeah. Simca? Well, they bought that. There was another one called Roots, R-O-O-T-E-S. They bought that. They bought this or built this operation in Australia. And before long, all of a sudden, they realized, geez, we're not making any money. In fact, mm-hmm. we're hemorrhaging money. Then the second oil crisis hit.
Yeah.
And John Ricardo did recruit Lee Iacocca from Ford. Actually, he didn't recruit him from Ford. Henry Ford II had fired Iacocca.
Yeah, we had to clarify that.
He said, I don't like you anymore. and so Ricardo got him to come to Chrysler. And then they realized, hey, we got to go to the government for a bailout. And they knew that they needed a clean cut. They had to, you know, Ricardo couldn't be the one asking. They had to say, look, we brought in the savior. We're going to do things differently.
Well, he did go
he
in
did,
and ask.
Yes.
And then they shut him down.
Okay. Is that how it went? Okay.
5 days later, I believe it was less than a week later, he announced his retirement.
Right.
And then that Iacocca would be coming in. And he said, well, it was for health reasons because he had just been in the hospital. He also mentioned that, you know, he's the face of a failing organization and mm-hmm. that to go forward, they need someone else to lead it.
Gotcha. This is not unlike Rick Wagner and General Motors, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or
the task force said,
yeah.
Rick, you got to go.
Yeah.
And
you're associated with the old GM.
Right. Mm-hmm. So another change that we saw, speaking of GM, is they're changing the name of their powertrain operations to, Gary, you probably got it written down.
So
specifically,
GM,
what
the,
is it?
The GM, so GM powertrain will henceforth be known as GM Global Propulsion Systems. So I thought that sounded a little odd, propulsion systems, because when I think of propulsion systems, I think of something that is not a car.
Yeah. A rocket or something?
So, yeah. So I looked, and so actually...
A gondolier in Venice. Well,
a submarine. Yeah.
I mean. So actually, NASA has the Beginner's Guide to Propulsion. And it explains, what is propulsion? And the word is derived from two Latin words, blah, blah, blah. But it says, propulsion means to be pushed forward or drive an object forward. A propulsion system is a machine that produces thrust to push an object forward. On airplanes, thrust is usually generated through some application of Newton's third law of action and reaction. Okay, so I got to thinking about this, and it's just like, okay, how many products does General Motors make that one would assume would be propulsion driven? I mean, let's give it and say, okay, electric vehicles. That's more propulsion than internal combustion engines. But I mean, the number of those vehicles is so very tiny that why would you, wrap your...
So you're saying that a gasoline engine is not a propulsion?
Well, it's not thought to be propulsion. You know what I mean? It's like...
Well, why can't fuel cell or electric be powertrain? I mean, it's the powertrain. It powers the whole thing. Well,
we were talking about the old GM. Mm-hmm. I mean, and automakers are trying to reshape themselves for investors, for one. I mean, Wall Street still hasn't given them any type of go-ahead and thumbs up. So maybe they're trying to reshape their image. And then they also, I mean, with the safety organizations after the ignition switch, they completely kind of renamed them and reshaped them. So I think this was just kind of a next step to say, we are determined on electric vehicles and propulsion systems, not the old automobile industry of Henry Ford and oil changes.
They just wanted to sound cool.
This was very odd. This is in the press release. GM is the first OEM to formally transition to a new naming convention to reflect industry trends and its evolution over the years.
That is something.
That's pretty good spin.
Yeah. What the hell? I mean, do they need to print new business cards or something? And they just want
they probably
to
do.
Yes.
Well, next week we're going to have Dan Nicholson, who is the head of GM Propulsion Systems. Mm-hmm.
Global Propulsion.
So we'll ask him what he thinks about the change or why they did it. He's also supposedly going to have a C7R engine here, too. So
maybe
there'll still be some piston talk in there.
Maybe Ford will have like universal or galactic propulsion systems, to overdo the global.
Well, it has to have EcoBoost in there.
Yeah.
Or innovation.
Yeah. Yeah, it just struck me as being very unusual, but...
Well, speaking of GM and powertrain or propulsion, I've been driving a Camaro SS this week with the 6.2-liter V8 and the 6-speed manual, and I am knocked out by this car. It is that good.
How many tickets you get?
I haven't gotten any, and that's part of the problem. Here it is, winter Michigan, and there's been snow and ice on the road, and I've been driving in a lot of traffic. I haven't had a chance to...
Open it up.
Engine-wise, yes. I've been able to punch it a few times. Haven't really been able to take in the full handling capabilities of the car.
See, that's my problem with cars like that, right? Is that they're really fun to drive, but you can never drive them anywhere.
Right.
And so it's more fun to drive a slow car fast than a fast car slowly, right?
You got a really good point there, Joanne.
There are a few places around Metro Detroit where you can
safely open them up and test them
out a little bit.
Right. No. And, if the weather was a little bit warmer because tires are rock hard, it's cold. And like I said, just my driving this week has been in areas with a lot of traffic. I haven't had any open on ramps or off ramps where I can really nail the thing. But I'm telling you, especially the 6-speed manual, it shifts beautifully. Mm-hmm. I don't know what they did, but they got the mass out and they got the friction out, and this thing shifts. Mm-hmm. Terrific.
What do you think is the future of manual transmissions? I mean, you don't hear too many, certainly in a car that size, right?
You don't, but it's amazing. For hardcore enthusiasts, it still matters. Even though these DCTs and even... Like, if you look at the automatic that they got in the Corvette, it shifts faster than a DCT, or certainly as fast.
Same thing with the Hellcats, yeah, and faster.
Exactly. But, there is something to be said. Even in these days, as we move to more and more autonomy or more and more technology that helps drive the car, I like heel and toe shifting. I know how to do it. I'm good at it. It's part of the pleasure of being able to drive a car, not in stop-and-go traffic. No, I'm all for the autonomy,
exactly.
But...
But you know how to do it, and there are so many people now that have no idea how to do it. I mean,
but they're not buying manuals anyway.
Right. I mean, and so if you're going to buy a performance car like a Camaro or like the Hellcat, you know, chances are you really want to be engaged and involved in the driving, right? But I mean, we had last week John Huang of Honda Civic, here talking about the Civic Coupe, and they're offering the Civic Coupe with a manual transmission. Okay, so I mean, and when asked about that, he said, "We do have the enthusiasts who really want to be engaged in their driving. So even with something like that, which I mean is certainly not going to, you know, John and his Camaro is going to leave that thing way back in the past. But
it'll pass me when I'm at the gas station, though.
I wonder if that's for cost sake. I mean, you know,
no, it's fuel. Street cred.
Well, fuel too. I mean, better.
Yeah, I tell you,
the automatics are getting better than
they
the
are. Manuals. Yeah, but they really are
because they know when to shift and we don't.
Right. No, in the not so distant past, you would have been right, Mike, that manuals got better fuel economy than automatics. That's not true anymore. The automatics have gotten so good, but it's street cred. You know, for a real enthusiast like myself. If a car's got a manual transmission, that's a driver's car. Only drivers are going to get in a car with a manual transmission.
Well, John, I was driving, though, the TRD Tacoma.
Uh-huh.
And that had the manual in six-speed, and I had never actually driven a manual pickup. And that shifting compared to, say, something like the Hellcat or even the Camaro, it is completely different with the
good or bad.
It was smooth. It was a great transmission, but the weight balance and the amount of weight compared to the pickup compared to the Camaro or sports car. I mean, it was like night and day trying to drive that, but the transmission was great, and I enjoy it. However, when you're sitting in rush hour traffic going out of work, I mean, yeah, give me the automation or the Cadillac Super Cruise and just keep me in my lane now. Yeah.
See, but at the end of the week, you have this giant calf muscle.
So have you guys been in anything fun lately? Anything that you've been test driving stand out?
Just that Epcot car.
I'm driving a Mazda 3 Sport right now.
Mm-hmm.
Very fun.
Manual?
You know, it's not a manual.
No?
It's an automatic. But it's still, it's really fun.
Yeah.
And, you know, I like Mazdas a lot.
I've been saying that on the show. What I like is their whole approach to technology. It's very simple and intuitive. You don't have to go through layers of screens. Although I find going from one radio station to another is a pain in the
neck. Yeah, I was doing that on the way over here. It was, this is my biggest gripe with every car maker is the interface for the communication system is still not where it needs to be. And I kind of was wondering about this. You know, I think about, they're finally, I feel like a lot of them after like the third try now are starting to get it, figure it out how it should be. I mean, you know, certainly got Apple CarPlay and Android Auto, but even the embedded systems are finally getting more intuitive, right? But you have this whole generation of cars, maybe 5, 7, maybe even 10 years worth of cars, probably more like 5, 7, that are going to be used cars in a couple of years. And the person who's going to buy those cars is going to be frustrated as hell by the technology that's in the car. It was newfangled a couple years ago, and it was like, all right, we'll put up with it because, you know. But by then, think of where our smartphones and everything else will be. I think the fact that they got it wrong is going to be magnified in used cars.
Well, I mean, you're right.
It's even beyond that. I mean, if you think about it, you know, a computer with Windows 95, right? I mean, and we just like, ooh, we got to. but the thing of it is that you know, we're able to, you know, buy a new computer for not so much money. But if you invested in an automobile that has, you know, an old clunky system, and you just look at that and you say, my God, you know.
What was I thinking?
I've made it a point to actually ask the automakers when they come out with the new systems, can this go backwards? I mean, because Ford, we all know their problems with the infotainment systems that they had. I mean, J.D. Power, Consumer Report, they just slammed them for them. And these owners are going to be stuck there. And I actually I like the new Mustang a lot, too. Mm-hmm. And I said, I would not get that because I am into the technology in the car. And that infotainment system, the No, thank you. They've got the Sync 3 out there now that is much better, much more intuitive, much easier to use, and voice recognition's come a long way. But that previous system, I love the Mustang, but no thank you.
Well, look, a lot of this can be fixed in the future when they go to over-the-air updates,
yes,
which Tesla already has. And
right,
so when you can just beam in the latest software update while your car's parked overnight in the garage, that could take care of a lot of this stuff.
But will you be able to do that with a 2011 model, let's say?
No. Yeah. You can't even do it with a 2016 model.
Yeah, right.
They don't have it yet.
Right. So that's my window of cars. You know, this decade is
I wonder how much of this is planned obsolescence. You know, one of the reasons that car sales are rocketing ahead in the U.S. right now is people want Bluetooth, and mm-hmm, and they want Apple and Google CarPlay and Android Auto in their cars, and that's a motivator to get into it.
Mm-hmm.
But I almost wonder if the reason that everybody doesn't have over-the-air updates already, which, like I said, Tesla's had for a while now, is that it makes you able to keep on to your old car longer, mm-hmm, hold on to it longer.
Although people could just simply buy suction cups and just use these things in their cars, and there wouldn't be a problem, whatever.
Well, any car with the connectivity, like the OnStar, they technically have the capability, I believe, to do the over-the-air. But they just choose not to right now for the major components. But they can do the software or Uconnect now that you have the 4G and the 3G in the car.
Yeah.
But they're not used to that. And, I mean, it's difficult to transfer that,
right,
to go to
and some of the older cars, I mean, their operating system, the base operating system just is not capable of dealing with new stuff. So mm-hmm, so it basically looks like a Pong game from back in the day, you know.
Well,
green phosphor screen with a little thing going back and forth.
And Tesla's doing a few thousand vehicles, say. I mean, GM, if you wanted to update the Cruise, say, I mean, you're looking at hundreds thousands of vehicles.
Right.
You've got to have the bandwidth, you've got to have the capability, you've got to make sure it's right. Tesla messes up, they can go, sorry guys, let's just make that 1 inch higher on your vehicle and we'll be okay.
Right. Yeah. But then conceivably, if you think about it, I mean, so, you know, with your phone, I mean, when Apple or Android has an update, you know, it tells you, and then you go in and say, okay, now I want the update. So it wouldn't be as great a need for bandwidth as if they were to just simply say from master control, okay, we're going to throw on the switch now. You know, every Cruise is going to be changed. And they let people choose when to do it, assuming it wasn't a safety or some other issue related to the health and well-being of the driver.
Hey, quick break time. We got to take a break right now. We got to give a shout out to our good friends at Bridgestone. We got a lot of topics to get back into after this break. So don't go away, folks. We're going to give a shout out right now. Okay, we're back. So, Mike, you were at the Chicago Auto Show.
Yeah, I mean, it's always a great venue. It's a consumer show, not necessarily media, but always a fun show to go to.
So what were the highlights for you from a news standpoint?
Pickups, 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 more pickups. But, I mean, the thing that stood out at the show was really the Kia Niro. And it's their hybrid utility vehicle, they're calling it, which I'm not sure anybody's used that. But they're supposedly combining the best of the crossover with the best of the hybrid. They're shooting for a target 50 miles per gallon combined. The design, I think, needs a little bit more tweaking, but overall, I mean, they're going up against the Toyota Prius.
What don't you like about the design? The way it looked.
It already seemed aged. They unveiled it, and it already looked
You're kind of right. I'm looking at the picture. The front end, not so much, but that back end almost looks like the old Sorento.
You know what? I'm not going to lie. In the photos, it looks a lot better than when they showed it off in person, because I was looking at a few of the photos, too, when they unveiled it, and I was like, oh, yeah, I do like this. I do like it. And then it didn't have that fresh look when they unveiled it at the auto show. But, mm-hmm, I mean, they're really going up against Prius. And
so what about the RAV4 Hybrid or the Ford C-Max? I mean, don't you see that being more competitive?
Yeah, actually. But, I mean, they're really shooting for the stars. This is their first all hybrid on their new hybrid platform.
A dedicated hybrid.
And they're shooting for 11 green cars by 2020, including their Optima that they have. And then they also just introduced the plug-in Optima.
Mm-hmm. How are they going to move these things with gas being cheap? What did they say about that?
If I could answer that, they'd probably hire me.
Yeah.
I actually did sit down with one of the engineers, and he kind of just talked about, you know, gas prices are low right now. not everyone sees them staying that low. And people are going to continue to want these vehicles that get the 50 miles per gallon. And you're talking about driver's cars and having that manual transmission in a Camaro. Someone who owns a Camaro isn't probably going to want a Niro. These are people who want to get from point A to point B safely and cheaply as possible.
Well, look, 50 mpg, that's a big number.
Yeah, but I mean, when you look at it, Toyota's already there pretty much, and I believe the Malibu Hybrid, Joanna, you mentioned that.
Yeah, I want to say they're 46. 40s.
Yeah,
46.
But that's
yeah.
not a dedicated hybrid, yeah. so it's actually right. quite an accomplishment for that mm-hmm. car. But I think the one advantage, even though you say the Niro looks a little dated, as
it still
come
looks
out.
Good. I think my expectations were a little high
yeah,
for it.
But you know, I can't stand the look of the new Prius. I just think yeah. it's ugly. The car is terrific. Don't get me wrong. The car is. I have nothing wrong to say about the car. It's such an improvement over the old one. But woo,
it looks a lot. They borrowed a lot with the Mirai, didn't they? The whole front end.
Here we got. To me, the front end looks like it bit into a lemon.
Yeah.
You wouldn't rob a bank in it?
that was
despite
a fun.
Despite your Super Bowl ad. Right.
I almost think it's an improvement from the previous gen that just looked boring. And, I mean, it's still not my favorite.
But wasn't the last one, it became boring because it was so familiar?
Yeah.
Because basically, you know, you had the first generation car that looked like a clown car. And then the second generation had basically the look that they kept.
Until this one.
Exactly. So that had been out there for, what, 10 years
yeah,
at
right,
least?
Right. And I guarantee that's not mm-hmm. it, but...
So, I wonder if for hybrid buyers, styling makes that much difference because, to me, the Niro actually looks better than the Prius.
Yeah.
But
but that's my case. That's
me.
Aerodynamic.
Is that because you're making that comparison? I mean, so if you were to compare that to, you know, again, the RAV4 rather than... the Prius.
Oh, you know, no, I'd probably say the same thing, that I like the RAV4 better.
Right.
Yeah.
So I think that the exaggerated character of the new design for the Prius, which I agree with you by mm-hmm. about.
Mm-hmm. Hey, you can't argue with Toyota's success.
No.
Look, they're a hell of a good company. There's mm-hmm. no question.
Well, and their hybrid dominance, I mean, it's yeah. been going on for a decade now, like you mentioned, and Chevy's still trying to compete with the Prius with the Volt, and they have had lackluster success, so...
Hey, I love the new Bolt, though, from Chevrolet.
Yeah.
I had a chance
with a
to
B?
Drive it. Yeah, with a B, yeah. Bolt.
Bolt EV, they're
yeah,
saying now.
Yes, Bolt EV, that will help distinguish it. But, man, you know, I think that car is going to rock it. I really do.
I
think the market is going to stand up and take notice.
All electric, you think? Range anxiety, and especially here, living here in Michigan.
But, you know, 200 miles and it'll be over that. You know, people are speculating it'll be more like 220 miles. You know, for the vast majority of people, that means you only have to plug in maybe every 5 days or so.
Yeah.
So I think that gets rid of a lot of the range anxiety.
I have gas station anxiety because I never leave.
Wow.
Enough time.
Boy, if you got that, you got a real problem.
No. Here's the thing. I'm always late for stuff. And I'm like, I need gas. I'm going to have to pull over and stop and, you know, spend 5-10 minutes there. If I charged my car overnight, I think I might be okay. You know, I might be like, all right.
You don't have to make a second trip.
No, exactly.
Because you're doing it at home or yes. maybe even at
yes.
work.
Yeah.
Hey, I ran into something interesting. I'm talking to a buddy of mine. I didn't know this. The $7,500 tax credit for EVs, and there's still, I think it's a $2,500 for plug-in hybrids, is capped at 200,000 sales. And once you get to 200,000 sales as an automaker, boom, boom, you're done. There's no more credits.
Well, yeah, but I mean, you know, if you're selling 200,000 of anything, that's pretty much a mass market car.
It is, but...
It doesn't need incentive to sell anymore.
No, this is cumulative. This is not per year.
Right.
So,
but what ends up happening is it doesn't immediately go away.
No, it phases out.
So then it gets cut in half for the next two quarters. Then it gets cut in half again, and then it goes away.
Then it goes away.
Right.
But it does phase out. And
we shouldn't give money away incentives forever, right?
No. But what I'm getting at is...
EVs might need them.
So Tesla and General Motors are close to burning through half of all their credits. They're coming up on 100,000 units. By the end of this year, they'll be at about 100,000. So here comes the Bolt EV at 30,000 whatever, and Tesla saying they're going to have the Model E at 35,000. We haven't heard anything from like Ford or Honda about their affordable EVs. No doubt, of course, they're working on them. I wonder, could their strategy be to launch theirs just as Tesla and Chevrolet are running out of their credits? Because now you could have your quote-unquote affordable EV with a $7,500 price advantage versus GM or Tesla.
That would be a long-term play, I mean. But when you look at the EV market, though, still, I mean, even with the credits, they're not. It's not a booming industry.
Right. No, no.
Gasoline prices may keep Bolt sales from being sufficiently
robust. I don't know. I just saw Raymond James is predicting that 12 months from now, the price of a barrel of oil will be twice what it is today.
Really?
Twice. So in 1 year, they're expecting it to go from roughly 30 to 60 bucks.
And what reason did they give for that?
Look, you know, we know it's abnormally low. Mm-hmm. You know, there's always volatility in the price market. I need to read the full report. I haven't gone into the details of it. All I caught was they expect it to double within a year.
I think what they need to do more of is advertising the vehicles as fun to drive. You drive the Tesla
Model S.
I totally
agree.
And, oh, my God, that thing. I've never giggled driving a car, but I hit the throttle on that. And It is fun, but you don't get that from the automakers right now. It's all about fuel efficiency.
Oh,
but that instant torque is great.
Right.
No, I totally agree, and we've talked about that on the show, is they all try to put polar bears and that in their advertising, save the planet. And that's all fine and good, but that appeals to about 3% of the car-buying public. I totally agree. Talk about how fun they are to drive.
Yeah.
Got to have a little drag race, you know, with the instant torque off the line and see. You know, put a couple of them next to each other. That might be fun.
Mm-hmm. But, you know, I think part of the issue is that if you look at the Prius example, so basically they were the pioneer, I mean, even though Honda was, they were the pioneer in hybrid technology. And I think that is reflected in people who are buying hybrids, look at it from the point of view and say, you know what? Those guys know how to make hybrid cars. So if I'm going to buy a hybrid, I'm buying it from them rather than buying it from somebody else. So I think the same thing may happen with the electric vehicle. So if Chevy's out there and is able to say, you know, pound the stake in the ground and say, we are the company that pioneered affordable full EV capability, and Honda and Ford come, that...
Too late.
They're going to, well, and it's going to be, you know, that they're going to get the Chevy will get the benefit of the doubt because... Yeah, if I'm buying something that's complicated and tricky like an EV, I want to buy it from somebody who's built a few, thousand. So it may work out for
them. You know, I come back to the fact that the consumer's not really showing a lot of demand for these vehicles, but the government is, right? And so the government requires these car makers to sell them. They will sell them at whatever price they need to move them off their lot and satisfy the government. Mm-hmm. And if that means... slashing $7,500 off to match the delayed launch of someone else,
they will do it
because they have to.
Yeah.
Right.
And they'll lose their shirt on it, which is not good. But,
right.
You know, that is the fact of this regulatory-driven
thou
market.
Thou shalt sell them or else.
Exactly.
But then again, I mean, do you honestly think that anybody is buying a Model S because they're getting $7,500 bucks back from the government?
I mean, no,
that's in a separate category.
But because it's a great car. Yeah. And so basically, I mean, it could come down to like, okay, if you make a really great car and you said you're excited about the Bolts, and it's just like, you know, you might just say, I don't care how cheap gas prices are. This is a car that I really want to have. It's good for me and it's fun to drive.
The Volt, the original Volt's still a good car, though. And you got the fuel economy gains. You didn't have the range anxiety because of the gas engine. Still didn't sell. And that was at, what did it start out at? Late...
2010? Oh, you're talking
way
price
back.
Wise.
Yeah, price
yeah, yeah.
wise.
It was about
40. It was about 40, and then it began to come down. And I think maybe that was, you know, a problem because it started out of the gate so expensive. You know, you've talked about like the problem that Dodge had launching the Dart. You know, it was slow, and then it never. But I mean, it never caught fire. I mean, yeah, there were a lot of problems. But I mean, I think that unless you're able to get momentum at the beginning. When the car comes out, that you end up having problems right along, going forward.
First impressions count for a lot. Mm-hmm. If you blow the launch, you never make it back. You never do. Not even for years do you make it back.
Yeah.
So I wanted to run this video clip, I think, that we've got, the French supplier Forcia or Forcia or nobody knows Forcia. How to pronounce it. Yeah. Came up with this.
Even they don't.
Really cool thing of, I call it lightweighting via acoustics. And they figured out a way to get the resonator out of an exhaust.
Pipes in the system. When you set up a resonance in a pipe, it actually reinforces a tone. And that tone with which the pipe is sympathetic becomes louder as the engine passes through that frequency every time you run through the engine speeds.
So you hear the tone.
Normally, we would have to use a resonator like this, weighing 5, 6, maybe even 8 pounds in the system to cancel out that resonance. This is an unnecessary use of space and mass that we've elegantly solved with what we call resonance-free pipe. Resonance-free pipe cleverly places a patch precisely on the pipe that cancels out the resonance of that pipe without the mass and space consumed by a resonator.
Hmm. Okay, you can kill that.
For the OEM, space under the car is becoming more.
The point is when he's got his hand on it, you hear that, and he takes his hand off, and it pretty much goes away. And I'm blown away by this, that they're able to get rid of a resonator. Like he says, it's 5 to 8 pounds. It takes up some space under the car. And they figured out, Gary, you were saying, they're micro holes?
Yeah, so they put a series of holes strategically located, so as that noise gets set up, then that acts as the virtual baffle for the car. That, I mean, because you look at the can that they showed in the other one, which we're used to as a muffler, this is going to be a problem for Midas, I mean. Yeah.
I was wondering.
It's going to be a real problem
Midas is
for
gonna
Midas
hate
going
this thing.
Forward, unless they buy a whole bunch of lasers that they're able to do micro holes.
So there's a picture of the patch with all the little holes in it.
Yeah.
That I was metal, the little...
Apparently.
Yeah. Okay.
But I'm knocked out by this. I mean, who's ever gone to lightweighting via acoustics? Mm-hmm. I think it's really cool.
What's interesting, I think, about that company is it's more well-known for interiors.
That's what I was... Yeah.
Right. And they also do, wacky things like that. And another development that they came up with, which I even thought was even more clever than that, is they're talking about taking exhaust heat from a car... Right?
Yeah.
And then you take this exhaust heat and you turn it into steam, and they use the steam to drive a turbine, and then the turbine is used to drive a generator. Then the generator puts electricity into the battery. Then there's a condenser which turns the steam back into liquid, and it goes back into the thing. And so you have this. So what you're doing is that you're just driving your car, right? And you're creating heat all the time. Use the waste heat to create energy.
Yeah.
It's like genius.
It's really cool. It's really cool. So their first application they see is on long-haul trucks. So you would run all the electrical needs of the truck using the exhaust. So now you don't need an alternator or generator coming off the engine, which improves fuel efficiency. So
yeah. And what does it do for your emissions?
I don't think it changes the emissions.
You're
just using the heat.
Okay.
The heat from the exhaust.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So that's causing this stuff to boil the water.
But BMW had talked about that. God, I remember at the LA Auto Show going back 10 years ago, BMW has been looking into this as well.
Mm-hmm.
But I haven't heard anything about it since because, there's so much more electrical load. They're talking about going to 48 volts on all these things. And so everyone's looking at, where do you get the electricity? Where can you get the power? And,
right.
And to your point, Gary, why not use this waste heat?
Yeah, well, there's all kinds of ways that you can, and this also gives life to the internal combustion engine.
It does.
By doing things
making
like that.
Making it more efficient.
Right.
It never ceases to amaze me how many innovations are coming out to stretch the life of combustion engine. I mean, a lot of people were predicting they'd be gone a while ago, right?
Sure.
And yet people are continuing to find new ways to squeeze more efficiency.
Mm-hmm.
Mazda was an example, right, with their Skyactiv technology. But, 10 years ago they would say they could never meet the fuel efficiency numbers that they're meeting today. And they clearly are, and they've got room to run.
Right.
It's a testament to innovation and engineering. Mm-hmm.
Well, it's interesting talking about the Camaro before, right, with that big V8 in it, and that has cylinder deactivation, I think, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. Yeah.
So more fuel economy while you're able to open it up and when you do open it.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, and small innovations like this that you see coming out of the auto suppliers, I don't think they get enough credit for it.
They don't.
Because some of the stuff that they can show you at these showcases that are 5 years out are amazing. Continental does a winter showcase every year. I believe they still do it up in the UP. And they just show you these technologies that are coming. And in 5 years, you'll see them on production vehicles. And they blow you away, whether it's just getting rid of the emergency brake and using an electrical one. They have great innovations, and it's just little stuff like that where you go, why didn't someone think about that? Why didn't someone do this?
Right. No, I mean, so much of the innovation in the industry comes out of suppliers, not the car companies. Yeah. And the car companies squash the supplier.
Yeah,
don't tell anybody about it. Don't put your name on it.
Right.
You
know?
They're doing it less, though. I mean, six, 7 years ago, I started covering the industry, and you never really heard too much from suppliers. But now they are partnering with different suppliers saying, yes, this came from Continental, this came from ZF with the 9-speed transmissions, because so much innovation is coming out of that area and with new technologies and Google, Apple, or even some Silicon Valley companies. I think you're going to see a lot more of it.
Mm-hmm. Hey, let's take another break. Speaking of suppliers and technology, we've got to give a shout out to our friends at Henkel, and we really appreciate their support of the show. Coming back out of this break, we got Dr. Data, so don't go away. Let's roll that Henkel spot.
A little chemistry goes a long way, especially when it comes to vehicle development. From enabling the use of alternate materials to withstanding extreme vehicle environments, Henkel's adhesive, sealants, and surface technologies provide solutions for every vehicle segment. Come see for yourself. Our Detroit area headquarters offers 12 research and development and testing laboratories with the ability to do full-range testing and validation on actual vehicle parts. Sign up to tour our labs at henkelna.com/tour.
Okay, it's the part of the show where Dr. Data
all
takes
right,
the
so,
floor.
So this time we're gonna have a little quiz here. So Carmen, could you please bring up the first slide, please? So,
a pothole.
A pothole.
And many potholes.
Many potholes.
All right. So, question, please.
Ooh, annual pothole repair total for U.S.
Total
drivers.
For U.S. drivers. So, what on an annual basis does it cost for everyone?
In the U.S.
In the U.S.
Oh, let me do some math here. I'll say 10% of the 25 million. What's 25 million times $400?
25 million times.
Billion?
Yeah. Billion?
Is that right?
All right. Mike, what's your guess?
My colleague Mike Martinez just told me this yesterday, and I wasn't paying attention to him.
Sorry, Mike.
Because
you never pay attention to him? What you're saying?
I'm half and half. But, oh, God. Let's go. Oof. $1.5
billion? $1.5 billion. Joanne?
Maybe my math was wrong. I have no idea. How about $10
billion? $10 billion? John? Look at him. He's doing the numbers here.
One, two. I'm going to say $10 billion.
Carmen, show the answer, please. It's $3 billion
right.
Every year.
Okay.
Still a big number.
So then if we break it down to the individual driver, the number is $300.
Oh, see, I was saying 400.
Yeah, so it's $300 for, and then AAA also calculated that the average occurrence is three times over 5 years. So basically, this means that the average driver is spending $900 over a 5 year period. So then I got to thinking about this. So, okay, we have very low gas prices right now, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so the tax on the gasoline is not what it should be to repair potholes. And then we were talking about the Bolt, right? So if you're a Bolt driver, what are you paying in terms of gasoline taxes?
Zippity-doo-dah, nothing.
And then if you have that new Kia Niro car, which is getting 50 miles per gallon, your taxes will be fairly low because you're not putting much gas in. So what's going to happen to our roads?
It's just going to get worse.
Can they get worse?
Yeah, they can, because they will. You know, nobody wants to raise taxes, so we're willing to put up with a bunch of
broken roads. So, Duane, you work for the Capitalist Tool. Tell us about how tell us about how this is all going to be worked out. I mean, it's just, I mean, it's a real problem.
So there's been talk about a use tax, right? So you use the road, you get taxed.
Is that a toll?
I think there's a way, you know, with all this big data now, everybody knows who's driving where and how much they're on the road, right? Mm-hmm. So I presume that can be folded into your federal tax or your, maybe it's through your insurance. I don't know exactly how they would bill you, but a use tax is what we need now, right? Plus you have, you know, more and more shared mobility, right? And public transportation.
Right.
So somebody's got to pay for maintaining all of that.
Right.
So but the anti-taxers are equally opposed to being taxed on how many miles driven, because to your point, it's got to be tracked. Well, that's Big Brother. Can't have that either. So, I mean, I know the state of Oregon talked about doing this years ago of going to a per miles driven tax, not a gasoline tax. Oh, man. People came unglued with that idea.
Well, you know, when I was at CES, I met with these people from Liberty Mutual Insurance. And what they're doing is they are charging insurance rates predicated on miles driven. Mm-hmm. Now, they used to have a little device that you would plug into the OBD2 port.
You opt into it. My wife has one, yeah.
But now they're starting this with Subaru, they're going to be having this predicated on your cell phone, okay? So there won't be a dongle that you're plugging in. So when you're in your car driving, and I said, but what if you're in the car and somebody else is driving it? Or
you're in somebody else's car.
Or, you know what I mean? And there's all these, and they said, well, okay, here's the thing. You can go to the screen and you can say, that wasn't me.
No.
Or if you had the insurance and you were in that Camaro and you did something, well, let's say not particularly legal in terms of speed limits, and you had your phone with you, it would think that you were in your...
What's this insurance company?
Liberty Mutual.
Okay, I'm not going with them.
That gets to the, you know, the
look,
whole...
This is a fact of life. There are giant pipes that are now coming into cars and will be more so. And they will not only be putting data in, but they'll be taking data out. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, this is a fact of life, I think. And someone somewhere will figure out the right way to get the tax, the road tax money out of that without sacrificing your privacy.
Well, and while we're talking about roads and potholes right now, I mean, if you look at what people think the future mobility is going to be with these smaller cars and not needing as many vehicles, what happens with the assembly plants? What happens with the workforce? I mean, there is a whole future out there if this mobility happens and Uber and Lyft and companies like them take over. What's going to happen
to
the manufacturer?
Well, they still have to make cars, and they'll get replaced.
Though,
yeah, they will, because think about it. They're going to be in use 24 hours a day instead of sitting idle 90% of the day. So they will wear out faster.
3D printing?
What? You're going to 3D print a car? Is that what you're saying?
Eventually.
Oh, yeah.
I
agree with you. It's going that way.
And I'm right in the wheelhouse of that $900, by the way, in 5 years, because I've got to go get my sensors replaced on my tires right now.
Really?
Yes, from last winter.
Wow. Yeah. See, it's an interesting thing that you know, you're going to end up spending all this money, and presumably if you were taxed, it would be a very small percentage of that you wouldn't, be paying, you know, $900 or whatever that crazy number would be that you're going to pay for that sensor.
Hey, we got some questions here coming in. So George Ricci points out that BMW has been testing that, getting electricity from waste heat. He says, but we've not seen it make it into production, so we have to assume this is not cost-effective at this time. And he's probably right.
Yeah.
That's why I think for long-haul trucks, it does make sense.
Mm-hmm.
Our work says, don't you think that $7,500 pays the investment per vehicle, and by $200,000, they can reduce the price by that amount? I'm not sure I follow this here. Plus, they also come out with new models that restart the subsidy. No, that's not right. It's a maximum $200,000. Once you hit $200,000, as Gary points out, it phases out, but it phases out fairly quickly.
Well, I mean, it's like the carpool lane stickers in California. So basically, it used to be that if you bought a Prius, you'd get a sticker, but now you buy a Prius,
You don't get a sticker.
You don't get a sticker because they...
Is that right? Yeah.
In fact, they've run out of green stickers for plug-in hybrids. And they say they're going to have more, but they've run out for several months now, and there's no new green stickers out there.
And with the federal tax credit, I mean, we're in election year right now. When those credits do run out, who's to say that they aren't going to re-up them under a new administration, or they're just going to cut them and let them go?
Depends. Does Bernie win or does Donald? That'll make a huge difference. Okay, Espo says, I'm interested in buying a new car or truck this year. What I don't want is one with a Takata airbag. Oh. How do I find out what it has for an airbag? The dealer's not going to tell you the truth, I don't think.
It's not just Takata. I mean, Continental just recalled 5 million of them as well for airbags, but it was a different issue. So that's the tough question.
Is there a website where you can go and check?
There's a website where you can find out if a car's VIN has a Takata airbag.
Right.
I don't know.
It's a website.
Safecars.gov.
Safercar.gov.
Okay. You got that, Espo?
SafeCar.gov.
You can also look and see where each part has been sourced out of, or the percentage of what car has been sourced out of somewhere, too. But I'm not sure if that goes all the way to airbags.
No, but I mean, even if it did, if you saw that it had, you know, X percentage from Japan or X percentage from Mexico or X percentage from Korea or X percentage from, you know, how would you know that was...
Correct me if I'm wrong, though. Didn't Takata stop using this propellant in most of their current airbags? So I don't think the current ones are an issue. Now, you might have trust issues with this company, and I would not blame you one bit. So I'm not saying, you know, that you don't want a car that... I agree with your point. New cars
are being sold with the faulty airbags?
No. I don't think any automaker would put them in. They did stop using that from...
That particular propellant, I think, is no longer being used. But there's still a lot of cars on the road that still have that propellant that have yet to be recalled.
Right.
But this person is asking about a brand-new car...
I think you're safe with a brand new. I think it is safe,
but I don't know. Mm-hmm.
Even if it is Takata, it's probably safe.
But that said, Takata has not earned our respect.
That's almost anything, though. When you get right
blows
down
up.
To it, I mean, Toyota just had that recall for the seat belts, and they just have to apply a piece of plastic, and it'll make it all better. But
duct tape solves everything.
It does.
Okay, J.D. Clough says, what happens to people like me? He's a non-technical person, he adds, who doesn't have a smartphone. And yes, I still use Windows 95.
I mean, what does he mean? Because he doesn't have to be connected to the car. And like Joanne was talking about, I mean, they have their own systems internally that you can still use for infotainment. I think people who just have the regular phones are going to be just fine. You just won't have the connectivity that you would with a smartphone. Mm-hmm. Bluetooth is pretty much standard, I think, on pretty much all models now, it seems like. And you can still connect those type of phones, a lot of them, to the Bluetooth and just be able to talk to somebody over the car without having to connect your phone essentially to the hardware.
Or you could just drive your car.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, do none of these things. Yeah. I mean, you know, I've got a 10-year-old car and I got nothing. I mean, it's a Pong-like navigation screen, but
a navigation screen. Mine doesn't even have that, and it's 2010.
Okay, another one. B. Wilson 4 Web wants to know, is the list of legal diesels in Europe shorter than the cheater diesels? I don't think so.
I don't understand that.
Well, I think what he's getting at is I think other automakers offer diesels that do not have cheating software. And I'm sure that list is longer than the list of cheating Volkswagen Group.
I would hope so.
I would hope so as well. Okay, here's a question I wanted to ask you, Joanne. You might know the answer to this. And so Zetia just got a 3-year contract extension from Daimler. Do domestic executives all have contracts?
They do have contracts, yes, but they don't vote on it or extend it the way the German companies do. I mean, I believe it. They probably discuss it privately. Are we keeping him on, right? But it's a uniquely German thing, the way they announce that they've renewed so-and-so's contract for another term. It's almost like a presidential thing or something. Yeah.
But even U.S. executives,
they definitely have contracts.
Yeah, they have to have contracts. Yeah.
But are these for 3 years or 2 years or 5 years, or are they just open-ended contracts?
No, they're typically for a specific amount of time.
Yeah.
So why do we never hear that so-and-so's contract?
Well, that's what Joanne's saying, is this is uniquely German or certainly uniquely Daimler.
You could look it up. I bet you could go into the Securities and Exchange Commission and find the renewed contract for Mary Barra
or Mark. 547.
It's there. It is totally there. But
this just struck me as odd to see that.
Well, they make a spectacle of it. And I think it's kind of fun, actually. I think it's like they're pronouncing that we have faith in this person to continue leading our company.
Right. Yeah, but remember the last time they only gave him like a year and a half.
Well,
and everybody made a big deal out of that.
They put the pressure on him. It's very public, right? And I think it's kind of nice.
I like that better than when Alan Mulally was around and every time you'd see him, so how long are you going to be at the company for? And every time you'd say, you know, I'm committed to our one Ford plan. We're going to keep going with this. And then they announced that Mark Fields would be taking over. And it just gives you a timeline. I mean, Sergio's kind of done the same thing. He's extended his timeline a little bit a few times. But it's nice to know that an executive's going to be there. And then once they're there, they have a succession plan.
But I mean, but didn't Sergio's case that basically he extended his...
It's like,
okay, I'm staying longer. I'm staying until such and such a date. Versus this, it was like the board saying, okay, Dieter will be here for 3 more years.
Well, so two things. One, in Germany, in Europe, you have these supervisory boards that are different from the management board. Okay, so the structure, corporate structure is a little bit different. And but in all cases, the management serves at the... will, I guess, of the board, of the board, right? And so, they are the employer, not so. Sergio Marchionne serves his board now. He probably, I think, is the chairman of his board, isn't he?
He's the chair of Exor, actually, too, the holding company for the Agnelli family that owns Vice. He's the vice chair.
Really?
Yes.
Vice chair.
Because
I would imagine John Elkann has got to be the chairman, no?
I want to say yes, but I'm not 100%.
Well, Elkann, of course, is of the Agnelli family. Mm-hmm. And this is an Agnelli family empire thing.
I'm sure
Sergio is still an outsider to that.
He was the first non-family member to hold the position. Uh-huh. So, yeah, Sergio's unique. So.
Yeah. Yes, he is.
All right, what about Japanese CEOs?
They tend to cycle a lot faster, don't they?
Unless your name is Akio Toyota, and then you can say, I'm going to continue on for...
But you're right, Joanne. They tend to pick older individuals, and in Japan, you're supposed to retire at 62 years old, not 65, as is typical in the West. Mm-hmm. So I think you're right. I think they do cycle through their CEOs more quickly, unless, as Gary points out, your name's on the building.
Yeah, right. Yeah. These are good questions. I will go back and look some stuff up. I'll report back to you, sir.
Thank you.
Okay, another topic, Mike. You were talking about going back to the Chicago show, GMC redesigning the Acadia, and you're saying they're coming out with a line called All Terrain?
Well, that was at the Detroit show.
Oh, okay.
Yes. They did the Acadia unveiling, and they made it smaller. It's more in competition with the Grand Cherokee now, along with the Honda Pilot, and the third row is optional. But they also dropped the price of it by...
$3,000, right?
Upwards of $3,000.
Yeah, I think it was like $1,700 to $3,000, depending on the trim line.
Yeah, and I think they're really going after Jeep. And they've got a new all-terrain model on that vehicle where it's more off-road capability. Mm-hmm. And Mark Royce, after the unveiling, we were asking him about it, and he said, are we going after Jeep? He goes, sure. And then a follow-up was they're also going to offer more four-wheel drive systems that the rear disconnect, where you can have a four-wheel or the two-wheel drive. And, I mean, that's something that Jeep's been doing now for years. And why wouldn't you go after Jeep? Because they have been so successful. They've been holding up Fiat Chrysler besides Ram, I mean.
Right. So. Yeah, no, it's amazing to me that Jeep has had that segment essentially to itself. Nobody, you know, if Hummer were still around, it might be a different equation, but...
And Marchionne's pointing this out, Mike Manley pointed out, but if you go to other countries and they see an SUV... they'll call it a Jeep,
right,
whether it's a Jeep or not. And with the global presence and the global expansion, 4 year of consecutive record global sales for Jeep, they're expecting a fifth. I mean, someone's got to take them on head on a little bit harder. And while they're trying to take on Land Rover Jaguar, maybe with the Grand Cherokee, a more luxury version, or the Wagoneer family, as Marchionne called it, which no one really knows what that means. But
I think there's a Wagoneer and a Grand Wagoneer.
Yes, but a Wagoneer, everyone knows what a Grand Wagoneer is. A Wagoneer, not so much. But I think GMC, I mean, that whole brand's a cash cow for GM. They're making great, great profits off that. The vehicles look stunning. And
so here's my advice to them. Don't mess with success.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, Jeep is good at what they do, but GMC, as you say, is making a ton of money at that. They should not mess with their formula.
That's good advice.
Well, you know, and to the point of the all-terrain, which you mentioned, John, and I looked into this. So there is a Sierra All-Terrain X. That's the name of it. But in their description of what this thing is, they say, quote, styling is the biggest influence on Sierra customers, and the new Sierra All-Terrain X builds on that with a more aggressive, personalized appearance that complements its exceptional capabilities, said Duncan Aldred, vice president of GMC sales and marketing. So it doesn't sound to me like they're going hard-ass, you know, we're going to go out Jeep. It's just like, well, this cool-looking thing that has four-wheel drive.
I mean, let's throw out there, I mean, how many people who own Jeeps actually go off-roading?
Right.
It's all about the styling and the persona.
Right.
And while you have the Wrangler buyers that might go out to Moab and do some off-roading, I guarantee maybe 90 to 95% of the people who are buying Cherokee Trailhawks have never been off an asphalt road in their life, maybe a dirt.
But they can.
Yes, and that's why they have the Trailhawk model, and that's why they have the Trailhawk Renegade, to keep that persona of Jeep alive, mm-hmm. whether it's a soccer mom vehicle like the Cherokee, a lot of people are calling that now because everyone, all the soccer moms have instead of minivans, but it's that
for
persona,
now.
And GMC's trying to have that persona.
It's going to change.
And look at the Ram Rebel. The Ram Rebel doesn't have any more off-road capability than, say, the Ram 1500 necessarily. It might have lifted if
but
you suspension.
But look at the Power Wagon.
The Power Wagon is something different. But the Ram Rebel, it's aesthetics. It's looking like it's powerful, and it's looking like it's unique and can go off-roading.
But is that what, you know, you're saying that you need something up against Jeep. So
yeah,
is a trim package enough to do that? Or
no.
Does somebody have to come out with fundamentally something that is...
It's got to have all the credibility that the Jeep brand has. You know, this is why I think Ford wants to bring back the Bronco. You know, I hope it's not an O.J. Simpson Bronco. I hope it's more like...
It's a trim package.
Yeah.
Someone mentioned that to me in Chicago.
Right. You know, if you look at the original Bronco, it was a Jeep-like vehicle.
Yeah.
And if Ford can package that kind of magic and have serious... Okay, here's the O.J. Simpson
it was Bronco. White, though.
Yeah, well, his was white. Yeah, right.
Wasn't there a Kardashian connection, too, so they could maybe...
The lawyer, yeah. The lawyer for him. I'm watching that series right now, but back on
that.
The... No, not the Kardashian. Oh, okay. The O.J. Simpson one, though.
Yeah, you could have missed that.
The all-terrain model, though, I mean, it's just another trim model to say we do have the capability, we can do this, whether you want to use it or not, be my guess. But, and I mean, Jeep's Jeep. They're celebrating their 75th year this year. You can't buy the publicity that Jeep has from its 75 years of history, whether it be World War II or just the different models that have come out of it. It's just renowned globally as this SUV brand. And for GMC or even Ford to come out, that's why they need the Bronco or something like that. People will know the heritage of, I think.
Yeah. Yep.
So what if they bring back the Hummer? Would that work?
I don't think so.
What do you think?
No, I don't think so either.
For GM, I could never see GM resurrecting that.
I think it was sort of a joke when it was around, and I think that they would be ridiculed if they brought it back now. I just think the world has moved on from there. You know?
I think it's too late.
Yeah.
Toyota's got the FJ Cruiser that kind of is like a Hummer mix. They should have dropped it years ago, but I mean, that was kind of...
There's a whole lot of investment over the years. I have a feeling that they, you know, they're just like, well, we got the tooling, what the hell.
Anybody who wants to take on Jeep might as well just buy it, because it may one day be for sale in the not-too-distant future.
Yes. Right.
I've been told it has been called the savior brand.
Yeah.
Because
how many times and how many car companies has it saved?
Three?
You know, exactly.
Yeah.
American Motors?
Mm-hmm.
And, in fact, Renault had it for a while.
That's right.
Right?
Yeah.
They
didn't
really know what to do with
it. At least three.
Yeah.
Yeah.
At least three, and, you know, mm-hmm. definitely helped Chrysler.
Yeah. So who would buy it?
Volkswagen?
Ooh, there's...
What do you think? Not.
Who wouldn't want to buy Jeep?
Yeah, exactly. Who
would? Okay, but if you're a Ford, would you buy Jeep?
I mean, yes.
You think?
I would. The Jeep nameplate and the recognition and the heritage of the renowned presence of that brand globally. Yes, I would. I would say anyone, maybe GM wouldn't, because they already have pretty much a full size of SUVs, and it'd be direct competition.
You look at the profits that thing throws off. I think any car.
I mean, the Wrangler in general, that iconic image of that Wrangler. Right. I everyone would. That's why Marchionne wanted Chrysler in the first place.
For Jeep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Ram was just kind of a nice little side thing now.
Hey, look, we ought to wrap it up at this point, but great show. Mike Whalen, thanks so much for coming on from the Detroit News. Joanne Mueller from Forbes, great having you here.
Thank you, John.
And Gary, let's do it again next week. And we'll ask Dan Nicholson why it's GM propulsion.
Exactly.
I will tune in.
Maybe they're going into some, you know, anti-grav technology or something. Mm-hmm. You know?
Oh, yeah. Now that we know gravity waves, why not?
If you have 10 questions from one screen name, that might be me.
Well, good. Want to thank all of you for having tuned in.
AutoLine After Hours is brought to you by Bridgestone Tires, your journey, our passion, and by Henkel. Excellence is our passion.
Visit our website, AutoLine.tv, where you can watch us live. Get your daily news fix with AutoLine Daily and in-depth analysis and interviews with AutoLine This Week. There's all that and much more at AutoLine.tv.